couple of months ago, I went with my daughter back to the East Coast to visit my mother. All my brothers came in, all four of us were there. And we decided to go out to a family dinner. There was the usual bickering about where to go and who likes what food and who's allergic to what and whose kid is allergic to what or might develop an allergy to something. We finally decided on a place, and my mother, as many of you know, is aphasic. That is, she had a stroke 25 years ago, and she really can't speak. She can say a word, sometimes a couple of words, but she has great difficulty in anything longer than a phrase. So we went through the dinner, and all of us were talking, and she was observing, as often happens. And we came to the end of the dinner, and then all the four boys took out their credit cards. And my mother looked at us and she went, "No!" And we were shocked. Couldn't believe that my mother was going to actually pay for the dinner. So we sheepishly started to put our credit cards away, and she looked at us again and went, "Dessert!" And this began a train of thought in my mind that was confirmed, if you will, with two other stories. One is literally a joke that I read just a few weeks ago in an essay on humor that began with the following story, which sounds like an old one, about a man who's complaining that his wife can't hear, and his friend says, "Well, look, if you want to judge her hearing loss, this is what you do. You stand behind her at a distance, you say something, see if she responds, move closer and closer and closer until you get to the distance where she responds and you'll know what you're dealing with." It's okay. She stands by his wife and goes, "What's for dinner?" Nothing. Comes closer and goes, "What's for dinner?" Not a word. Happens a couple times. Finally, he's almost on top of her and he says, "What's for dinner?" And she says, for the fifth time, "Meatloaf." Wait, I'm not done. This was finally reinforced by the death this year of a wonderful philosopher and wit, Sidney Morgenbesser, who was a professor in New York of philosophy for many years, but was known almost as much for the cleverness of his remarks as for his philosophical arguments. And in all the obituaries, it mentioned the most famous story about Morgenbesser, years as a philosopher, and this is the most famous thing about him. He didn't like pretentious British philosophers. And he enjoyed, because he was brilliant, he enjoyed poking holes in what they said. And once J.L. Austin, who was a renowned British philosopher of language, came to City College of New York to deliver a lecture. And this is how he began the lecture. He said, "You know, in every language, two negatives mean a positive. If I say, 'I will never not do that,' it means I will always do it. But," he said, "in no language that we know of do two positives ever equal a negative." From the back of the room, Morgenbesser went, "Yeah, right." That was it. Lecture was over. Now, what strikes me about all these things, let me just take the dessert story. From now on, that trip is the trip in which Bubby said dessert. Lots of other things happened on that trip, but it doesn't matter. When I talk to my brothers, it's the dessert trip. Because one of the things that you realize in jokes, in any kind of epiphany, anything that suddenly shifts your awareness, first you think she can't hear, then you realize he can't hear. You think she's protesting against the money, but she really wants dessert. Anything that suddenly shifts your awareness about the world does not only change the future, It changes the past. All of a sudden, when you come to the end of the book reads differently because now you know what it was all leading up to. And I began to realize that tshuva was like that too. And not only tshuva, but people's lives work that way. Listen, Herzl died in 1904. When he died, he was a lunatic. He was crazy. He was this guy who thought by going around the world and talking to people like the Sultan of Turkey, he was really going to get a state for the Jews. 44 years later, he was a visionary. What happened after he died changed the story of his life. It changed the past. And that happens again and again and again in our lives. Maybe the greatest hero of American history, Lincoln. In his life, you know how Lincoln was regarded. Not only that, but in the midst of the war, even after Gettysburg, 52,000 men had died in just a few weeks of fighting. And in the North, people were suing for peace and calling him a warmonger. The most famous journalist of the day, Horace Greeley, was talking about how the people are bleeding and all they want is peace. And Lincoln looked like this bloodthirsty leader who only wanted to fight wars for his own ends, but he didn't give up. He knew that the Union could only be preserved if he found himself a general who would fight. And so he stuck with Grant. He won and became the greatest hero in American history. But the future changed his past. Now, all of a sudden, what seemed bloodthirsty and mindless, we realized was visionary and statecraft and the only way that this country would have survived. And that's part of what we're saying to people in our tradition. When we tell them to do tshuva, we're saying, change your past. If there was something this year that was painful, that was awful, that you did or was done to you, you can change it. Because you can make it, instead of a problem, a prelude. Instead of a stumbling block, a stepping stone. Everyone knows that when you have a terrible fight with someone, if you make up, you often end up closer than before the fight. So you change that fight into something that estranged to something that would bring you close. Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev was known as the lover of Israel, Ohev Yisrael, because he always found good in people, whatever it was. And once in his town, the story goes, there was a terrible, unregenerate sinner, a bad guy, a cruel guy, an evil guy. And once Lev Yitzchak came up to him and said, you know, I envy you. The man said, why would you envy me? Everybody knows what I am and how I believe and how I don't believe and what I do. Why would you envy me? You're supposed to be holy and I'm supposed to be the worst. And Lev Yitzchak said, because we read in the Talmud that at the end of time, all sins will be turned to light. My, how you will shine. But his future will change his past. What seemed like sins will be rays of light. And that, in exaggerated form, can be true for all of us. That's what we're really doing here. We're trying to change the story and have it end differently, and therefore the beginning is different. If you've ever read a really good novel, when you finish it, if you go back to the beginning, every page reads differently once you know where the story is headed. And the same is true of a human life. Once you know what you can do with the story you've been given, nothing has to be the same. Each action creates its predecessor. That sounds strange, but it's true. Because now it's the predecessor to where you are now. It led to the path of a good place instead of a bad place. I told you a story about my father, my mother, so let me tell you a story about my father. My father's father, who died when my father was young, was actually a vaudevillian. He was a song and dance man. This may not surprise you. But when he got married, my grandmother, who was part of a family that was in the catering business, did not want him to sing and dance and travel around vaudeville, so she forced him to be in the catering business, and I say forced him because he hated it. Not only did he hate it, but he was no good. Not only did he hate it, but he was no good at it. He wasn't a businessman. He wanted to sing. He wanted to dance. He didn't want to do sums. And when he died in his mid-40s, as a very young man, they found drawers and drawers of unpaid bills. People he never bothered to call, he never followed up on. And the story in the family was that he was a failure and almost bankrupted the business. Many years ago, I asked my father why he was a success. I said, "What is it that drove you? Why did you succeed?" And I'll never forget his answer. He said, "I became a success because I wanted to make sure that the story of Ben Wolpe's life wasn't Ben Wolpe failure. It was Ben Wolpe, father of a successful son." He changed his father's life after his father died. And if you can do that for someone else, you can do that for yourself as well. As long as we are here, we don't only get to change the future, we actually get to change the past. To make it different, to make it better. Even though Isaiah tells us, "Your sins be scarlet, kisheleg yalbinu, I will make them white as snow. I'll change them all to rays of light." That's why we're here. To ensure that the disappointments, the frustrations, the pains of the past, and also our own sins, our own neglect, our own callousness, our own cruelty, that all of that becomes part of a story where it leads us to a better place and therefore it is redeemed. It's redeemed. In the coming year, I hope that we will be able to lead good, soulful, dedicated, concerned, and loving lives. But I also hope that in the process of doing that, we will realize that we have changed the story of our lives up to this moment. Because now, all of our story, the good, the bad, the light, the dark, it's leading to what we have become. And if we are better, if we are kinder, if we care more for our tradition, our people, and our world, then what a wonderful past and what a glorious future. Shana Tova.